Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn, and I'm in our Milwaukee studios with Mike Crane, the director of WPR. You are listening to Wisconsin Public Radio, and we want you to know that we rely on listener contributions to pay for all of the programs that you enjoy here on the Ideas Network. During this, our winter membership drive, we're asking you to take action by becoming a contributor to WPR. Every gift helps support all of the programs that you rely on, so please make yours at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Let me get your mic.
Much better. Thank you.
There we go.
You know, we had a goal of 50 pledges for the last hour, Kathleen, and we tripled it, folks.
We sure did.
151 listeners made pledges in that hour, 152 now. It just recounted there. Thank you so much for those pledges. We have another goal of 50. If we go over, that will be terrific. But these hourly goals are really extremely important because they do help us to stay on track financially. Help keep the discussion going strong with your pledge to Wisconsin Public Radio right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
In just a moment, we'll be talking to Susan Jacoby. Many of you are familiar with her book. It is extremely important, and it is controversial, some of her ideas. The new book is Never Say Die, The Myth and Marketing of the New Old Age. Discussions like this on the Ideas Network are possible because of your financial contribution. Please support us. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You give to WPR to support the programs, and as an added incentive for your good deed, we have something special. You can receive Never Say Die, the book that we'll be talking about this hour by Susan Jacoby, when you donate $180 or more. Give now, though, at any amount at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And when you do that, you can ask for the latest book from Susan Jacoby as your thank you gift when you give $180.
On the Ideas Network, you hear about politics. One of my favorite hours of the week is all things political. You hear about science, the humanities, current events, history. You name it. It's a valuable service. It's a service worth supporting. Your contribution of $50 or $100 or whatever amount you choose makes these Ideas Network programs possible. If you have not pledged yet, please do so now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You know, supporting Wisconsin Public Radio today is one of the best things that you can do with just 3 minutes of your time. We need your name, your contact information, how much you'd like to give, and how you'd like to pay. Credit card, you know, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Whether you call or you pledge online, we will keep your personal information safe.
Your gift right now will turn into the stories and the programs that keep you connected to the world. Please give now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Pledge $120 and you receive the WPR member card. It won't take you long to recoup your pledge. You get 2-for-1 entrees, admissions, and golf course greens fees and B&B stays. That's $120 a year or $10 a month.
Please pledge now. WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Ask for Never Say Die, The Myth and Marketing of the New Old Age with your pledge of $180. Please pledge now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you for everything. Thank you for pledging. Thank you for being a great audience. You're the best. We do want to remind you, because this is a very big day in Wisconsin, that this afternoon at 4 here on the Ideas Network, live from the state capitol, we'll be bringing you Governor Scott Walker's budget address to a joint session of the Wisconsin legislature, and we will rebroadcast that address tonight at 7. Your hosts are Frederica Freiberg and Sean Johnson, with guest Todd Berry of the Wisconsin Taxpayers Alliance. So that's tonight at, or this afternoon at 4, and then again tonight at 7 o'clock here on the Ideas Network. Tomorrow at 9, we will be responding to what we hear today. It's sort of a daily event, isn't it? We're into the third week of this very, very big story in our state. And rest assured, we will inform you. And we will give you a chance to express your opinions on this. Susan Jacoby is our guest. Now, Susan has written a book that with a lot of ideas in it that not too many people are bringing up, and I think they're very important ideas. The book is titled Never Say Die, The Myth and Marketing of the New Old Age. Susan has written many, many important books, including The Age of American Unreason, Alger Hiss and the Battle for History, Free Thinkers, A History of American Secularism. She is with us this hour to talk about death and age and marketing to people who will believe that they're going to be forever young. Well, that song came to mind. Our phone number for you to join this conversation is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. And we have so much to talk about retirement, about 90 being the new 50, about sex and old age, about physician-assisted suicide to give people a couple more years of life if they're 100 years old, which is a story that she writes about. She writes about her family. She writes about social policy. And if we spend so much time on trying to give ourselves or guide us to the fountain of youth, what happens to all of the policies or lack thereof that we need to deal with the people who didn't find the fountain of youth or it didn't work for them and they're old and they're frail? And that will be many of us. And that's just the truth. Susan, thank you very much for being with us.
I'm happy to be here. Well, obviously, the solution would be, obviously, to deprive employees of collective bargaining rights. So there'll be money for the old. I don't know how you have time in Wisconsin to talk about anything else.
We've talked so much about it, Susan.
You're tired of it.
No, we're not tired of it. We just know that we have to cover other things as well.
Right, and there's a world out there.
There is a world.
The State House in Madison.
There is a world. And you have written, I must say that some of what you wrote has made me slightly uncomfortable. And then all of a sudden I realized we just don't talk about these issues. Here you are, Susan. You have the courage to write about some issues that just aren't discussed, and God bless you for it. It's an important book. You know, my father, I loved him dearly, and I miss him every day. He died 3 years ago at the age of 93, and one of the last things he ever said to me, he called me Kathy, said, "Kathy, don't ever get really old." And I thought, Dad, how can you say that to me? Of course I want to get really old. I'm glad that you got to be really old. And the more I think about it, the more I realized what that meant to him and that he was imparting to me some very deep wisdom.
Well, he was telling you something perhaps he didn't tell you before. Obviously, your father had his mind at the age of 93.
Yes, yes.
And so does my mother at the age of 90, and so did my grandmother at the age of 99. What my mother and grandmother do not have, which is typical of people who live that long, is their bodies have failed them. They would rather have that than to have a good body and a ruined mind. But what they have is sound minds and ruined bodies. My grandmother died in a nursing home after 4 years. My mother is basically confined to her room because of a variety of ailments which cannot be treated. And this is more typical of people who live to this age than not. So the boomers have this fantasy. And the fantasy of the new old age goes something like this. We're going to be healthy until our last day on earth. And how are we going to die? We're going to drop dead of a heart attack without ever having been sick before.
Right.
Making love or climbing mountains. And so the reality of what old age really is obscured by this fantasy. We'd all like it to be true. It would be nice.
Mm-hmm. Well, what about, and you write about this, the scientific breakthroughs that we're going to have a pill that's going to reverse the aging process. We're making all these phenomenal advances in medicine. So why not extend the life?
Well, first of all, we have not made phenomenal advances in the diseases of old age that eventually carry people off. Here's a statistic everybody hates to hear. I hate to hear it myself. Live to be 85, and you have a 50-50 chance of developing dementia, of which Alzheimer's is the leading cause. Now, there's lots of research going on about Alzheimer's. However, it is an extremely, the more research is done, the more scientists realize what a complicated disease it is, involving many genes. It is a disease for which I have no doubt someday there will be a treatment even to delay it. But you cannot base your social or individual planning on someday. I interviewed many researchers for this book, and they are confident that eventually this biomedical research will bear fruit, but more likely for the children or grandchildren of people who are now in their late 50s rather than for us. This is an infinitely more complicated matter than the kind of medical advances which involve replacing a joint, which is a mechanical operation, or a vaccine against a disease, which is based on processes of immunization that have been known for several hundred years. It's much more complicated. There's nothing wrong with hope, but as my dear friend Bob Butler, the first director of the National Institute on Aging, told me before his death from leukemia, he said, hope isn't a plan of action.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that there are pharmaceutical companies now who are ripping off family members of Alzheimer's patients with drugs that say that, well, you know, you can stop the process of Alzheimer's and your loved one is going to be in better shape?
Look, the science shows that these drugs do not stop the process of Alzheimer's. And that is not my opinion. It's the result of a huge review of anything that might thought to help Alzheimer's by the National Institutes of Health released last summer. These prescription drugs, if they have any effect, have only a marginal effect, and they're very expensive. And that is not only the conclusion of the review by our National Institutes of Health, but also by a British review not financed by the pharmaceutical companies by these drugs. Now, I can speak about this with some emotion and authority from personal experience.
Yes, I know.
My partner, who is 15 years older than I am, died of cancer, but he also had Alzheimer's disease, and mercifully, cancer took him before the last remnants of his mind left. Now, why doctors prescribe these pills, why I gave them to him when I'd read enough of the science to know that they essentially have no effect, is this. You are stunned by your own impotence when this happens to someone you love. I remember so vividly his turning to me on a bus one day and saying, somewhere inside me is the person I really am, the person I used to be before, but I can't find him. I can't talk to him. So what do you do when someone you love or a longtime patient says something like this to you? Even if you know this memory pill is not going to halt anything, you give it to him. Now, my partner, while he was still able to think things through, quite clearly did not believe that these pills had any value either. I can remember him taking one on a beautiful summer day and just saying, Svet gornish helfen in Yiddish, which means literally nothing will help. Well, that had been the punchline of a lot of ancient Jewish jokes he used to tell in the days when he could tell jokes. Yes, these drugs are worthless. We will have drugs someday that will be worth something, but that day is not now.
Mm-hmm. You talk about these seminars, and I'll bet there are tons of them taking place all over the country. 90 is the new 50.
Well, that was actually what started me on the book, because this was a panel at the World Science Festival in New York in 2008, and I thought, who really believes this? Well, a lot of people really believe it. They really do. This room was standing room only, packed with 40- and 50-year-olds, and the general tone, the one voice of rationality on the panel was Dr. Bob Butler, who was the former director, as I said, of the National Institute on Aging. But there were peddlers of resveratrol, an enzyme found in red wine, which one of the researchers told people was going to maybe reverse aging and cure Alzheimer's, not in the future, but right now for those people in the room. Guess what? GlaxoSmithKline, the pharmaceutical giant that bought that company for $720 million, just dropped its research on resveratrol because it no longer thinks it's fruitful. That story was buried inside the newspapers, where all sorts of stories about resveratrol reversing aging in mice were front page stories. And that's typical. Anything that can be, you know, touted as a possible anti-aging breakthrough gets this huge play because, of course, we all hope for such breakthroughs.
Mm-hmm.
But 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 realistically, they're going to be a long time coming. And so what happens is when something doesn't work out, and the vast majority of drugs, not only drugs related to research on aging, tested in mice, if they work in mice, the vast majority of them don't work in men. That's the process of scientific research. That's why you don't just do clinical trials in mice before you put a drug on the market.
And what about all of these face creams? And I must say, I've purchased more than my fair share of different brands. Which one is really going to work? Should I put it on before I go to bed or in the morning when I wake up? You know?
Well, this is the lighter side of it. Yes, and they all have the adjective age defying.
Exactly.
Before them.
Right.
Good luck.
Right. It doesn't work.
They're nice moisturizers.
There you go.
They can make your. Let's put it this way. I'm 65. They can make your skin look a better 65. They can't erase the lines and make you look like you're 40 or 30 again.
I know. And they charge so much money too. Such a ripoff.
Of course. Anything that has age defying in it, of course, there's huge amounts of money to be made.
Yeah.
I mean, this hope of reversing aging is hardly new. I mean, there's nothing new about it or American about it. You find it, you know, right in the classic literature. It's been there forever.
And on a serious note, what it does keep us from doing is looking at public policy and looking at how we help people who will be among those who will be frail, who will have difficult time going gently into that good night because they're not well. And so how we treat these people, and then we come up with, what about their health insurance? What about procedures for the very wealthy to lengthen their lives for 2 years or 3 years while somebody else dies much earlier because they don't have health care? It keeps us from looking at those very real and very important issues.
Right, because if 90 really were the new 50, then we haven't got a problem.
Yeah, exactly. So the other things that you bring up here, and let's talk about that. Let's talk about the disparity among those who have and those who have not when they are old in this country. Actually, it keeps some people from getting old, right?
Well, yes, of course. Naturally, the poor live shorter lives because they have less access to health care at every stage of the medical process. Life expectancy for women in Appalachia has actually gone down in the last 20 years.
Isn't that something?
Mainly because of increase in obesity and smoking among women. And there are. Life, good health habits will not protect you from getting Alzheimer's, but what they will do is give you a better life at any age, and in old age, they will help you live in a better way with diseases for which there is no cure, like diabetes, and which are age-related, but for which, there, unlike Alzheimer's, there is treatment. And all of those good health habits are good in themselves. Not because they're a magic bullet to protect us against the diseases of old age. They're good in themselves. But also, the economic disparity between the rich and the poor, why should it be surprising? It weighs even more heavily on the old, because the old, and especially the oldest old, don't have the capacity to go out and, quote, get a job or make things better for themselves. And I remember former Senator Alan Simpson of Wyoming, mysteriously the co-chair of the Federal Deficit Commission, describing Social Security as a cow with 310 million tits.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is disgusting. And I don't think, by the way, that this misogynist metaphor was by accident. The majority of old people, especially the oldest old, are women. Two-thirds of people over 85 in this country are women. So I don't think that was exactly an accident. And now with the budget-cutting mania, people are just talking about the need to cut this and to cut that. Well, the fact is that of people over 65 in this country, three-quarters have income from all sources, including Social Security, of under $34,000 a year. By what standard is that lavish living, I ask you? How would you like to live anywhere in Wisconsin on less than $34,000 a year? It's
right.
Not easy, is it?
No. No. Susan Jacoby is our guest. The book is Never Say Die, The Myth and Marketing of the New Old Age. Our phone number for on air is 800-486-8255. 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Susan Jacoby, our guest, and Joelle from Madison, our first caller. Hi, Joelle.
Hi there. I am only 25, but I heard somewhere that you're only allotted a certain amount of heartbeats in your lifetime. I was wondering if your guests could comment on that.
That we all get a certain number of heartbeats before our hearts give out, you mean?
I'm not sure what the question means.
I don't know
what she means. We're only allotted a certain amount of heartbeats in our lifetime. Obviously, people who live longer have more heartbeats than people who don't, but I just don't know how to answer the question.
Let's just take it from this, that you can only have so many heartbeats, so the human lifespan can only be 115 or 120. I've never heard this before, but...
Well, there's a lot of argument about that. It's kind of a quarrel within the scientific community about people who want to do fundamental research on how to extend lifespan, feeling that targeting aging genes is the key to treating all age-related diseases. Then there are people who want to try and target the diseases themselves. I don't think there's anything immoral about wanting to live longer, but I don't think it ought to be a social priority. In other words, if research on aging is the best way, for example, to find a treatment for Alzheimer's, that's fine. But I don't think that extending the lifespan itself is all of the things I think we need to do socially. That's a very low priority for me. I'd like to see all kinds of research of work, not just medical, because old age is not just have health problems. How do you make 90 a better 90 and 80 a better 80, rather than how to make a few rich 90-year-olds who'll be able to afford these biomedical treatments if they're developed live to be 120? Who cares?
Yeah. And you write about that. One of these that made your mother mad and made you mad, some wealthy person... I think they were fairly wealthy. They were 100 years old, and the doctor did surgery and was so proud of the fact that he extended the life of this 100-year-old person to 104.
Ooh. It was a little heart surgery, but after that, she was confined to a wheelchair and had to have full-time home care. Well, she was very lucky she could afford full-time home care. Most people couldn't. And I don't think, by the way, we're now getting into the issue of health care rationing at the end of life. Mm-hmm. We do, in fact, have health care rationing. All of those right-wingers yelling about death panels are just hypocrites, because, in fact, the only person who could afford to live at home after an operation like this at the age of 104 is someone who had a lot of money
for
home care.
Right.
Most people would be in a nursing home.
Mm-hmm.
However, I think that there is something. I think that we don't need to ration health care in the way of saying you can't have this transplant, let's say, over a certain age. One of the things that would have a great impact on a terrible problem in Medicare, which is the huge amount of money that's spent not only in the last year but in the last month of life. 90% of Americans say they want to die at home. Only 20% do. The reason for this is largely because the vast majority of Americans, 70%, do not have living wills, have not written out instructions, have not appointed someone to be their legal representative called a health care proxy. I don't think most people want to die hooked up to machines in the hospital, receiving treatment so-called that can only prolong dying.
Amen.
Yeah, but if people don't take responsibility for spelling out their wishes and appointing someone to execute them if they cannot speak for themselves, then we have only ourselves to blame if we end up that way. And if we could simply encourage people who want to express their wishes about end-of-life care to do so legally, there would be a huge cut in that end-of-life budget in which enormous amounts of money are spent on keeping people in a living death in intensive care units who don't want that but somehow didn't get around to doing anything about it.
Hmm. So if we did that, we could pay our teachers and firefighters?
Yeah,
and...
No, but we don't need to be talking about things like suicide and voluntary euthanasia. Let's first get people to think about and legally write down
what they want.
What their idea of good end of life care is. My mom did it 30 years ago.
Yeah, it's a sign, I think, that we deny death in this society. We really deny death. Not that it's an easy thing to deal with, but it happens to everybody, huh? Pretty darn common. We're all going to die. And on that note, let's... I don't mean to be a downer, but it's true, and it makes a difference in how we live if we know we're going to die. I'm Kathleen Dunn. Mike Crane is joining us in our Milwaukee studios, and we are asking you to think about big issues like this and how much you rely on WPR's Ideas Network for enlightening and informative discussions. We are here right now to remind you that WPR relies on you to keep programs like this one. This is a big topic. This is a kind of topic that people don't talk about very much, and it's important. This is our winter membership drive, and a gift of any amount makes a big difference in our ability to pay for the programs you count on. Please make a gift right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
It's like we say, talk about issues that matter.
Right.
Matter to you. Give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Help to pay for the programs that you depend on. We're looking for 34 more pledges in the next 28 minutes or so. We could use your help. That's just over a pledge a minute. That can happen with your help. Make your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And you might wonder what your pledge pays for. Of course you wonder that. Well, we have toll-free numbers so you can call in with your questions, a very, very important part of our operation. We rely on newspapers, magazine subscriptions, internet services, so we can research the topics of the day. We have equipment which is needed so we can bring this service to you all over the state of Wisconsin. All of these things and many more have costs, and your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 helps pay for them.
You know, you can receive Never Say Die, The Myth and Marketing of the New Old Age by our guest today, Susan Jacoby, as a thank you gift when you make your pledge. Pledge $180 or more, and your pledge will help to support the programs, and you'll get to have the book as well. That's Never Say Die for your pledge of $180. Of course, your pledge of any amount supports WPR programs at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Wisconsin Public Radio keeps you informed and entertained every day. You also get value from this program, Joy Cardine, Larry Mueller, Zorba Pastor on Your Health, and many others that you really have come to rely on.
WPR gives you a window on the world like no other, and please support the exciting mix of programs that you enjoy on this station with your contribution at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We all look for ways to economize, of course, with our money and with our time. Here's a way you can economize while supporting Wisconsin Public Radio. You can become a sustaining member and choose an amount that's right for you, have it charged monthly from your bank account or credit card.
When you're a sustainer, you're pledge will be renewed automatically each year, so we won't need to send you renewal mailings. That saves all of us paper, time, and postage costs. Becoming a sustaining member right now is a great way to make an ongoing monthly contribution, and because you do that, we would plant a tree in the Shawamigan-Nicolet National Forest on your behalf, sustaining in the same way. Give now by whatever payment method is best for you, credit card, check, at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And we have a goal of 50 callers. We have 16 right now, so we would like to have 34 callers before the end of this hour. And it's a special hour. Susan is a very deep thinker, and this book is looking at an issue that we don't talk about very much, and that's so important for who we are as a people and what our individual lives and getting older mean. It's Never Say Die. Susan Jacoby is the author, and with your pledge of $180, you can further think about these important issues. Pledge now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And thank you so much. Let's go to Lynn from Eau Claire next. Susan, hi, Lynn.
Hi, Kathleen. Hi, Susan.
Hi.
I'm a victim of old age, of the progression of old age. I'm 56. That's not terribly old, but no. It's starting. Never say die. arthritis, pain, horrible, horrible pain. And we don't. I don't suffer in silence. I suffer in secret because I thought that I was doing my children a service by not letting them in on this horrible little secret that old age or the advancing of your time on this planet hurts. And then we're told we're depressed. Of course we're depressed. We hurt. Well, we'll give you a pill for that, but we won't address your pain. We'll just put you to the back because you've had your four children. You've been useful, and now we'll just tolerate you.
I don't know. I should say your call disturbs me because if you're only 56 and you have this level of pain, and I'm no doctor, but I wonder what kind of access this woman has to medical care. I'm not a diagnostician, but there is no reason why somebody at 56 should be in this much pain. There are lots of ways to treat pain. But she addresses something which, and I'd urge you, if you possibly can, to get to a doctor. You certainly shouldn't be suffering in silence with something that is normally treatable in this society. However, for older people, it is very common for people, particularly in their 70s, 80s, and 90s, to talk as little as possible about whatever pain they are in. One of the reasons people do this is that one of the benchmarks for successful aging in our society, and you cannot complain about your health if you are going to be considered to be aging successfully. This is really something. The people who are considered to be aging successfully may be people who really are just lucky, who don't have a lot of the typical health problems of old age, or they're people who are careful not to talk about it to younger people. And it's not only health. Here's something else you can't do and be considered to be a successful ager. You cannot grieve openly about the loss of someone you love who has died for much more than a few months. Mm-hmm. After that, you're considered to be depressed and a real downer. There was an op-ed page in the Times by some social science researcher a few weeks ago, describing 6 months as the typical period of deep grieving after which you should be worried about the person. This is just utter nonsense. The idea that someone should be walking around chirpily 6 months, let's say, after their life partner of 30 years has died. People grieve in different ways, and they grieve for different amounts of time, and we shouldn't confuse legitimate and normal grief with clinical depression. So one of the benchmarks for aging successfully is don't complain about anything.
Right. Don't complain about anything. Do you feel that you're still grieving, Susan?
Well, of course.
Right.
And you don't have to wear black for the rest of your life like Queen Victoria for 50 years to be grieving. The idea that there is some sort of a health timetable after which if you grieve, you should be getting antidepressants, and there's something abnormal about it if you're not out there looking for another mate 3 or 4 or 5 years later. It's utterly ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, you brought up the subject. Let's talk about other mates then, because there is a fascinating part of the book in which you, let me see if I have it on the right page here, in which you talk about, particularly about older women, this diminished sense of physical attractiveness, and in the same breath, the more fundamental life and death question of whether old women can afford to pay for the food and medicine or whether they're sick and in pain. Women, you write, are much more likely than men to experience all of the most severe quality of life problems, emotional and physical, associated with longevity.
Well, that's not the common point of view, and often it's said that women age better because they have more women friends than men do, and that's true. I think usually the fact is when a man loses his wife, if he's in reasonably decent shape, you see men remarrying pretty fast, a lot of them. The women are the first to invite them to the dinner table to get another mate.
Right.
For most women who are widowed, whether in their 60s or 70s, because there are so many fewer men in that age group, there isn't that kind of opportunity that there is for men. And the fact is that a lot of men in their 60s and 70s, the very few men who are divorced or widowers, many of them do prefer younger women. I don't mean women in their 20s, but I mean women in their 40s. And I don't blame them for that. I'm not saying this as some kind of a feminist rant. It is a fact of life that as people get older, as men get older, their sex drive isn't as strong as it once was. They often can only be aroused to performance by somewhat younger women. I don't mean to be too clinical, but that's just a fact. There is a biological reality that underlies the preference of men without mates for younger women. So even if you want to remarry or find a new partner, it's going to be more difficult for you as an older woman.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem is my grandmother in her early 90s said to me that one of the worst things about living to the age she was, and this was before she was in a nursing home, was that she had outlived all of her women friends. And I remember vividly what she said, that there was no one left who remembered her as she was, as a young woman, rather than as this old woman. And I can see that could be a real problem. For the oldest survivors don't only lose mates of the opposite sex, they lose their friends of their own sex.
Yeah, I would think that that's one of the very most difficult things. Right, no, you're not.
Because loneliness is a sign of depression.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Lynn, thanks very much for the call. Let's go to Glenn in Manitowoc. Hi, Glenn.
Well, good morning. I'm going to step off topic just for a moment, and that is people like me of modest income. Wisconsin Public Radio is without a doubt the number one source and the only source to get discussions in depth, such as your last guest, Mr. Johnson. Knowledge is power, and those that are controlling the corporate types that are controlling want to silence Wisconsin Public Radio. Please, people like me, send in $50. Send in $100.
Hey, Glenn,
whatever you can afford.
Thank you, Glenn.
Now, I mean, it's for real. I mean, this.
I know it's for real.
You guys can't say that the corporate money is out for your necks. But if anybody watches politics, it's been ongoing for the last 3 decades. Easy. Now back on topic.
Okay.
I'm 60 years old, of modest means. I have a realistic expectation of I don't see myself getting that old. I am the oldest member of my family. I'm now the patriarch, so to speak. And it's more about what kind of life we're leaving for the next generations. I'm okay with it as far as being able to deal with grief. It's not that you ever give for people that you care about that we have lost or passed. It's not that you ever really give up the grieving process. You don't. You learn to cope with it and move on and look at the next generations. I mean, that's time immortal. Being 90 years old and seeing like some of my past relatives have been, there's no desire to reach those ages because, frankly speaking, I'm not a Trump and I can't afford those medical procedures and there is no public health care. And the death panels of insurance companies are definitely there.
Susan.
Well, first of all, you're not old enough for Medicare yet, but who knows what's going to happen to that in the budget-cutting mania. But I think I have two reactions to that. I mean, of course, life becomes more about what you're leaving for the next generation as you get older. But I don't see myself, as you know from my book, I don't have any illusions about how I'm going to live forever and how I'll be as healthy 30 years from now as I am now. But I am interested also in living the best life that I can now. And part of that certainly is what you're leaving to the next generation. But I don't think one thing I really dislike is the idea of the wisdom of old age. And it's a sort of contemplative kind of thing in which you sort of rest on your laurels and you retire and contemplate how wise you've become. And that's what you leave to the next generation.
Oh, please leave us just that, Susan.
Yeah.
No, aren't we some wiser?
First of all, there are lots of wise old people, but they were people who were wise, and much of wisdom to me consists of learning from your own mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not able to do that at 40 or 50, you don't suddenly become a wise old person able to learn from your own mistakes at 70 or 80. If you're an abusive 50-year-old parent, you don't suddenly become a really nice 80-year-old granny. My observation of the old has been that people become more of what they were, only more so. And I offer to you as Exhibit A the memoirs of Donald Rumsfeld, now age 78, and Henry Kissinger, now age 87. Mr. Rumsfeld, his memoir about the Iraq War, when he talks about mistakes, which he doesn't really admit were made, but they weren't his mistakes. The self-justifying memoirs of venerable people who were once in public office are one of the best arguments against the idea of the automatic wisdom of old age I can imagine. Rumsfeld and Kissinger are who they are, always were when they were younger. They are bureaucrats and men who wielded power who are justifying what they did in the past. They haven't learned a thing. And I think if you can't admit to your own mistakes when you're 40 and 50, you certainly don't acquire some magic wisdom when you're 70 and 80 and 90.
Susan Jacoby is our guest, and her book is Never Say Die, The Myth and Marketing of the New Old Age. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And Joan on the Road is our next caller. Hi, Joan.
Hello, this is, I need to pull off the road because I am driving a state car. I am an ombudsman in central Wisconsin. And number one, I want to say thank you very much for the Ideas Network. I listen to it all the time when I'm on the road for work. And also thank your guest for her wonderful writing. I remember her being interviewed before with The Age of Unreason or whatever it was called. And I just want to reiterate, after more than 25 years of working in long-term care, both at the county level and now at the state level, and going to be 60 myself this coming birthday, that she's right on the mark with what she's saying. And, 50 is not, or 90 is not the new 50. People are living longer, but you're right, the chronic diseases that affect older people are not the ones we see all the medical miracles with. So that's all I wanted to say, and would appreciate your guest's comment.
Susan.
An ombudsman. What a wonderful job.
Mm-hmm.
No doubt a job, one of the many state jobs which are considered increasingly irrelevant and not needed, but they are needed. 90 is not the new 50. No, that's right. However, I'd kind of like to close with there is something, if we have our minds, and that's a very big thing, as we move into that 80 and 90 group. My grandmother, on the last day I saw her, just a few months before she died at the age of 99, it was the last time she was ever out of the nursing home. She took a long look at the river where I took her for a picnic, and she said, "It's good to know that the beauty of the world will go on without me."
I knew that.
I was hearing something special at the time. If I could say that whenever I die at the end of my life, in the full knowledge of my rapidly approaching extinction, I'd consider my life a success, even though I will never succeed, as no one will, ultimately, in defying old age.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we won't, will we? Susan, thank you.
Thank you. Love Wisconsin Radio. Keep the faith, Wisconsin.
Thank you, Susan. Susan Jacoby, the book is Never Say Die, The Myth and Marketing of the New Old Age. I'm Kathleen Dunn with Mike Crane, WPR's director, and this is the Wisconsin Public Radio Winter Membership Drive. We have so many things going on. We're talking about the old age, and we're talking about budgets, and we are in a very important pledge drive as well. More than ever, you rely on Wisconsin Public Radio and the Ideas Network for intelligent discussions, and we rely on the money that you give to help keep that talk on the air. Your gift today of $60 or $120 or $180 if you'd like to receive Susan's very interesting and controversial and provocative book will help keep this important forum for discussion on the air in the coming months. Please give now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We've been having a great morning. We are looking to get 17 more pledges in the next 8 minutes, so we need your help right now. Your pledge helps to keep this program and all the programs on the Ideas Network strong. Make your contribution at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
I know you've been enjoying the conversation with Susan Jacoby, who's a great thinker, about her new book, Never Say Die, The Myth and Marketing of the New Old Age. Please take a few minutes to make this hour and all the hours to come, because there's always another hour. There's always what's next, what's next, what's next. That's what keeps me going. What's next? What happened? How do we analyze it? What's next? What's now? Please put a value on the programs you enjoy every day and make your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Now, 16 pledges. We heard from someone.
All right,
that's great.
Thank you.
You decide the amount of your pledge. Every single pledge is appreciated, and every one helps to pay for the programs you love on WPR. And consider asking for Never Say Die, that book by our guest this hour, Susan Jacoby, as your thank you gift. Pledge $180 or more to get that at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
I think in the last 4 years, I've upped my contribution every year. I'm using the service. I feel I should pay something towards it. Not that I should have to, but I want to. If we don't support it, we won't have it. It's a free service. Nobody's making us pay for it. And that's a little easier to take than if somebody would say, yes, you have to pay for it.
Mike Crane is joining me in Milwaukee, and we are here to ask for your support of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're not making you. We're asking for your support. Pledge at WPR.org, 888-202-2552. Your gift could be $50 or $100 or $500. Whatever amount you choose is the right amount. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You know, for you to get great radio, WPR needs to pay the bills just like any other business. And specifically, we need to pay for programs, phone lines, computers, and broadcasting towers and antennas.
And if you can, consider a $1,000 contribution, and it will help cover those costs that Mike just mentioned and help make fulfilling our mission, providing valuable programs for Wisconsin possible. Make your pledge in any amount at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
15 more pledges needed. Just 5 minutes to do that. We need your help. You know, on WPR's Ideas Network, you hear substantial topics, mm-hmm, just like this hour. We know you want more than just the headline, so we're sure to go in-depth on the issues that matter to you. Make your donation in support of the programs you count on at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And in addition to the fact that I every day am aware of the fact that my life is limited, I also think about this service and all that we provide every single day. It astounds me. And I've been in radio for 38 years. Every day I keep thinking, this is great. What happens in the rest of the world matters to us, and we talk about it, and we're the only place that does it this way. It takes on the kinds of issues that you just heard. It's why WPR is so important. We talk with experts in all kinds of fields from all over the world.
And we get the news from our own backyard and around the world.
Mm-hmm.
Because you value being an informed citizen, make a pledge to the station that keeps you connected at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
This hour you can receive Never Say Die, The Myth and Marketing of the New Old Age by Susan Jacoby when you make a contribution of $180. Susan goes beyond the obvious in getting old. She really challenges us to think about public policy, about sex in old age, about all kinds of important issues, about how long we want to live. Your donation supports the programs you love, and you can always get this really nice thank you gift with a pledge of $180 that will challenge you. It'll make you think even more now that you don't think. Now I know you think, you can think even more. Pledge now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
13 more contributions needed to get us to this hour's goal. How about your help? Can you provide it right now? You know, we do pay for the things that are important to us. Mortgage or rent, important. Food, definitely important.
Very important.
Wisconsin Public Radio, when you think about it, that's really important too.
It sure is. Life just wouldn't be as good without public radio. So because you know that WPR is important to you, we ask that you invest in it. Support the programs you enjoy and rely on every day. WPR.org, 888-202-2552. Looking for 11 more pledges.
A gift to WPR is a gift through Wisconsin Public Radio to the community. You enjoy this radio station, and so do many others who can't afford to support it.
A gift to WPR is a gift through Wisconsin Public Radio to the community. You enjoy the radio station, and so do many others who can't afford to support it.
So how about you? Can you be in touch right now? WPR.org or 888-202-2552. We heard from Daniel from Fitchburg who said, I like listening to your guests and your interviewers are fantastic. Joy Cardine, Kathleen Dunn, Larry Mueller, and Ben Marins come immediately to mind when Daniel thinks about people that are doing a great job day in and day out providing you with the information that you value. Please get in touch.
Thanks, Mike Crane. We want to remind you this afternoon, this is a big day in Wisconsin. The governor's budget address to the joint session of the Wisconsin legislature at 4 today. It will be rebroadcast at 7 o'clock tonight. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing the hour, Chrissy Pease for on-air production. They're great producers. And thanks to all the work they do. Thanks for listening and pledging.